The following program is brought to you in living color.
A clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going. Let's drink. Me from my glass and you from yours.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Why is it people who can't take advice always insist on giving it?
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape in all its glory, the travels of the vine, and everything else in between. Well, thank you for tuning in today. We have some interesting topics to look at. If you think back to the theory of the show, we're trying to make grapes approachable, we're trying to make wine approachable. It's always interesting. We've talked about value, we've talked about what you should be buying for your table. But the ulterior motive for The Wine Crush is to educate you and to help you think about wine a little bit differently. Well, today we are definitely going to do that because we are going behind the scenes in a very unique way. I think the thing that's been in the forefront of our mind as we look at CNN, as we look at the news, as we look at what's going on in Washington is, of course, the financial situation going on with the economy. How can we afford to do things? Are we in a recession? Well, of course, that's got to impact more than just our pocketbooks. And of course, my mother has always told me to shift my paradigm, to look at things differently. Well, today I am, and so are you, because we are going to look at this from a winery's point of view. We are going to look what's going on in the economy and see how it might affect whether they open a winery, what factors actually go into making a wine. And of course, we're going to look at some mistakes a lot of the wineries do when they're trying to get their wine to market this time of year in this kind of economy. To help us do so, we have two great guests. We have Rob McMillan. He is the founder of the wine division at Silicon Valley Bank. We also have Miss Dixie Huey from Trellis Wine Consulting, and she's going to talk about the five worst mistakes that wineries make when they're trying to come to market or when they're trying to get their wine out. So between looking at it from a bank's point of view, how fiscally responsible it is to start a winery, and between the most mistakes that you can make in actually creating a wine and doing a winery as well, we should have you well on your way to being able to start your own facility. Now, whether or not we're all crazy enough to do that, I honestly don't know. But, well, we'll find out. Certainly, I would love to see Laura's Chardonnay, but I think we're going to have to wait a while on that one. But, of course, when we're talking about Chardonnays and Laura's Chardonnay, it just brings to mind the fact that I like to drink, and so we might as well talk about what I'd like to drink today. And I've got two interesting recommendations for you. I went outside the box a little bit on my whites. Yes, I am getting out of Chardonnay, just briefly. I'm trying to change my palate, for about 2 weeks. And to do so, I have gone up to Washington State and found a winery called Snoqualmie. Snoqualmie has been really in the news lately for a series of wine it does. It does a series of wine called Naked. They do a Naked Riesling and a Naked Gewurztraminer. And, of course, they also do a whole bunch of biodynamic organic wines as well. But the Naked series always catches our attention. You put alcohol and you put Naked together on a label, and it's bound to at least come up with some interesting alternatives. But today we are looking at just the basic Snoqualmie 2007 Chenin Blanc. This is from Washington State, and Chenin Blanc tends to have a bad rap. I think a lot of people remember back in the day when it was a 3-liter gallon jug on the bottom shelf, generally made by Gallo or one of the guys that ended in vowels, and it was just overly sweet, and you might as well pour it on ice cream. Today, Chenin Blanc definitely is not that. It definitely mirrors the legends of the Loire Valley. And it's got great apple. It's got great acidity. It's got nice melon. It's got nice pear. And it also has that little bit of lemon on the finish that lets you know the acidity is there. So when you put the melon, the pear, and the lemon together, this is really refreshing, especially when we're looking at the heat of July and everything that's going on. This is a good summertime wine to chill down, even though I don't like to say leave it in the ice bucket, sit outside, sip a glass, and of course be with the lemon, the melon, the pears. It goes with all the great summer fruits and the summer salads, the lighter fare that all of us are supposed to be indulging in. So Snoqualmie 2007 Chenin Blanc out of Washington State is your white to write down. Or, of course, you can check it on our website, winecrush.com. Our lovely producer, Miss Laura, will definitely have it up there. Laura, would you like to say hello today?
Hello, and yes, it will be up.
Yeah, see, we like this. We have gotten rid of Kent for a whole week.
We are running the show.
We are running the show, which means we will most likely run it into the ground and have a call from the French embassy. And I'm sure that there are a lot of you out there that are going to wish I was on a five-second delay. But at least we'll have more fun with Laura in the booth instead of Kent.
Nice.
So check that out at winecrush.com. And while you're looking at that, you can write down the red recommendation for the week. We are looking at the Villa Mount Eden Grand Reserve Pinot Noir. 2007 just came out. This is out of Russian River. And what I like about this, as we're talking about value and we're talking about mistakes wineries make, I think a lot of people in the Russian River have these really big, massive Pinot Noirs that are coming in at $30, $40, and $50 a bottle. And as much as I do enjoy those Pinot Noirs, it's a little bit strapping for my pocketbook right now. So I was delighted when I found this bottle, 07 Villa Mount Eden Grand Reserve Pinot Noir. It has that typical strawberry, the cherry, the toffee notes, everything you expect out of Russian River. But because of the oak, it gets great cranberry. It gets great soft finish. It is a good summertime Pinot Noir. Once again, for those of you who are thinking about reds in the middle of 100-degree heat, remember, room temperature is 65 degrees. Whereas we decided it was 75, 80, I have no clue. But get a bottle of Villa Mount Eden 07 Grand Reserve Pinot Noir. Toss it in the refrigerator for about 30 minutes. Get that thing chilled down so when you pull it out, it gets that nice little dewy coating on it. And pour yourself a glass. I think you'll find it going great with stuff off the grill. It, too, will go with the summer salads. But I think seafood when I think this. Think of the tunas. Think of the pink fishes. And I think you'll enjoy it best. So there, your wine recommendations for the week. I guess we could say that these are wines that do it correctly. Today, obviously, if we're talking about it from a winery's point of view, we're going to look at the backside. Obviously, we're going to focus on California. I'm lazy, I have to admit. Without Kent here to figure out how to dial internationally, it's much easier to get the opinion of people here in the States. So let's think about what's going on in California. If you were going to go out and open your own winery, you would be one of 2,843 wineries in California. So that is a substantial amount. See, this is why I love at parties when the guys come up and you mention some kind of strange winery and they look at you and nod just like that little dog in the back of the windshield. Yeah, no, chances are there's nobody who knows all 2,843 wineries. However, if you're one of those people, feel free to call us 877-4-CRUSH-1. Kent's not here to filter and I could use some entertainment today. But past that, there are that many wineries. There are 4,600 wine grape growers. And there's over 110 different grape varieties grown. So when we're looking at putting a winery together, I think anyone who looks at a business plan, the first idea is, what's my niche? What is the reason that I'm going to make something different that everyone's going to buy? And I think as we talk to our guest today, that might be something that we definitely find out is a problem of what's going on in wine country. Not everyone decides they have a niche. They just have their own idea of what things should be. But interestingly enough, if you're going to start a winery, most likely you are going to plant Chardonnay. Chardonnay remains the leading varietal wine coming from California. Ergo, I am the Chardonnay sipping diva. Chardonnay is not dead. And yes, there is anything but Chardonnay because thank you, California. That's what people are planting. After that, you have Cabernet, you have Merlot, you have White Zinfandel and Pinot Grigio. I have to admit, I'm delighted to find out that Pinot Grigio is slipping up on White Zinfandel. I don't know how we have a White Zinfandel planted, but of course, we'll just totally escape that and say the fourth largest grape is Zinfandel. There we go. We have now corrected the California Wine Institute. Well, I'm sure it's not the only person I will correct, but right now we've got to take a small break. When we return, we are going to have Mr. Rob McMillan, the founder of the wine division at Silicon Valley Bank, to enlighten us on what we need to do to find the funding and what we can do right to open a winery.
If they want to drink Merlot, we're drinking Merlot.
No, if anybody orders Merlot, I'm leaving. I am not drinking any Merlot!
The Wine Crush.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it. So call us right now. 800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. 800-500-5437. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable health insurance, call us now and see how we can help you. 800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. That's 800-700-5437. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
If you're self-employed or run a small business, you know your business bottom line. But do you know your bottom line when it comes to your family's health insurance? The Mega Life and Health Insurance Company helps self-employed folks and small business owners focus on the bottom line every day when it comes to their health insurance plans. Here's the bottom line. If you don't have the right health insurance plan, you could be in trouble. Check your health insurance coverage today and call Mega, where the bottom line is quality health insurance designed for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call now for your free health insurance quote.
800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. That's 800-700-5437.
Market and plans vary by state. Not licensed in New York. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Association group plans, where available, require association membership.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUsKids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay-sipping diva, and we are off and rolling to a conversation that we're hoping is going to shift your paradigm a little bit. It's bad enough that all of our pockets are hurting in this recession, but we do have to take time out to have sympathy for the big guys and think about all the wineries out there that are sitting on older vintages or just sitting in a situation where they have wine they can't sell. To help us shift our paradigm, we're going to have some help. Right now, we have Rob McMillan. He is the founder of the wine division at Silicon Valley Bank in California. Rob, welcome to The Crush.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is fun. You are someone that the type of things that you do are the kind of person I'd love to have you in the studio, and let's just debate all day. It'd be a lot of interesting interaction going on.
I'd love it.
But I've got to ask you, we have tracked you down because you made a comment that the wine industry is in the middle of a cyclical downturn, and that Central Coast vintners have some advantages that will help in the recovery. Using that as a baseline, we're going to start here. What do you do for a living, and how did you wind up doing what you're doing for a bank?
Well, I came up with the idea, actually, that it would be a good idea to start a wine practice dedicated solely to the fine wine business on the West Coast. And when I did it at the time, the rest of the conventional wisdom said that A, you shouldn't focus on one thing because you ought to put all your eggs in one. You shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. And two, the wine industry was a risky place to lend. But it actually ended up being a great move, and I was able to move up to wine country and still work pretty hard. But you know, now I have a 66-step commute versus an hour and a half. So
let me get this straight. You work for home, you play with money, you get to live in the wine country, and you deal with vintners all day.
No, it's even worse. I actually walk out my back gate to my office.
There you go. My sympathy level for you is just going right out the window, Rob. Totally and absolutely.
I'm lucky.
Hey, listen, I do have to ask you a question. It's a running joke. I've been in the wine business for years. Rob, do you know the answer to this question? How do you make $1 million in the wine business?
Start with the big fortune, but I'm chum.
There you go. All right. I wanted to make sure you and I were going to be on the same page. So tell us, you know, we're looking at this from a winery's point of view. Obviously, I don't think there's anyone that doesn't realize we're in the middle of a downturn all the way around from whatever industry you're looking at. How is this affecting our vintners, and how can we come out of it?
Well, the wine industry is extremely complex. When you look in your supermarket, all you have to do is, you know, you find two aisles of bottle after bottle after bottle. And oftentimes when I walk into the grocery stores, I see people just staring blankly at all those bottles. How do you make those choices? Well, those are the same questions that vintners, you know, have to ask themselves. How do I get these bottles to market first? And how do I break out of the clutter? And that's being made, you know, more and more difficult daily because distribution is very hard for very small wineries. And then the economy on top just plays a major role in what's happening with consumer demand.
Oh, without a doubt. When you look at your distributors right now, they're cutting back. They're trying to drop wineries right and left, aren't they?
Yeah, distributors have gone through a large-scale consolidation to end up with more of a nationwide footprint. So, you know, they would like to be able to deliver SKUs of bottles in, the 10, 20, 30, 100,000 case levels when, a small winery might be 5,000 cases total. So getting that into a distributor's hands ends up being a problem. They don't really particularly want that kind of business these days.
No, they really. I mean, distributors, they're notorious for being difficult. We know that across the board.
Yep.
Past that, when you're looking at this, do you think the vintners have unrealistic expectations about coming to the market or what the consumer's looking at?
I think it's changed over time. If you look at the whole era of the 90s going forward, we started out in a period that roughly mirrors this. I was actually talking to Michael Mondavi. Here's a name drop.
I
was talking to him last night.
Is that on which side of the gate was that on, though?
This was actually at a client event. I'll use the name Dariush Winery.
That's two. You're up to two. You're only allowed five.
I'll save my other three for the end. Michael thinks that this is very much like the 74 time frame, but however you want to frame it up, it's a more difficult time frame. But throughout the whole 90s, the market started to increase, and you really went through a period of time where if you made good wine, you could sell it, and that started to become the dominant mental position, I think, of most wineries. All we got to do is make wine, and it'll sell itself. You hit about 2000, and then you had to really come to terms with a very strong sales strategy to get to market. And it can't just be cut price, because there's just limits to what you can do. People may have an idea that these wineries are making money hand over fist, but back to your very first comment, how do you make a lot of money in the wine business? You got to start with a lot more, because it just takes, A, a lot of capital, and B, even in good years, you're probably making pre-tax 10 to 15%.
If you're lucky.
So it has to be a labor of love in a lot of ways. If you go back to the early 90s, there was a study that was done, and the question was, how do you make money? Same question. And the answer is you don't. When you make your money is when you actually sell your winery, later on in your life. So it's a difficult business, and it's certainly been made more difficult. And I think that the wineries, the premium high-end wineries are having to come to grips with, what exactly is the consumer going to demand? What price point are they willing to pay? How do they put wine into their daily life today?
What percentage of wineries do you think are actually making money right now?
Well, that's a great question. I've actually never thought about it that way, but it's I would guess it's probably something like 60%.
Really? You were higher than I was guessing that maybe 35 to 40%. We've seen so many new startups that have to do so much debt management. I figured if it was that high, that's good then.
Yeah, it's wide. So you have on average, the industry is probably going to break even this year and have flat sales. Just in the fine wines segment.
I hope so, because I consider flat to be up.
Well, that is the new
flat is up. I'll do backflips over flat. I promise you that. On that note, and looking at things, some people say that this was a price adjustment that was coming to the high end wines. This was a price adjustment that all the prices in California had gotten out of control. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Well, you have to look at assets worldwide. So I don't think that there is necessarily a bubble. This is what people were willing to pay both for houses and for everything else for that matter. There was a tremendous amount of wealth accumulation, again, during the 90s as it related to public policy. We just created a bunch of money just really because we had pegged inflation rates the cost of money below the cost of inflation. It incented people to borrow a lot. And so we got what we deserved from that standpoint. And wine follows, you know, right into that suit. We saw, you know, when I started this practice, it was pretty common to see a bottle of wine for about $25, good bottle of Napa Cabernet at $25. And that same bottle today is $75. Now, that sounds like a lot, and maybe it is, at least from the standpoint that it's harder to find clients that are willing to pay for that. Unless you have a well-known brand, it's got established distribution, established in the marketplace and restaurants, etc. Those brands are still doing quite well. It's the other 40% that are newer, that are more highly leveraged, that didn't develop their market strategy, etc. Those are the ones struggling.
Well, unfortunately, we're getting close to having to wrap up, but I'm going to ask you one question. If you could give our listeners out there, I'm sure there's probably a good, 400 of them that have decided they're going to open a winery. What would be the one piece of advice you would give them before getting into the business?
I'd say don't. it's a tough business.
Run.
It's pretty well fill up. Unless you're in a small market area, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to aspire to the Napa Valley. I would say look at land cost first.
So okay.
Look at the Umpqua Valley of Oregon, look at the Walla Walla area of Washington, and back to your earlier question about the Central Coast. You can find land prices that eventually end their way into the cost of the bottle. And they're more in tune with those prices that are in that the consumers are really demanding on the shelf these days.
So ultimately, if they're going to do it, number one, don't. But second, look for value. That's what we should all be abiding by. Well,
and
Rob,
start with the real estate.
Rob, thank you very much for being part of the Crush. It was great having your perspective. And hopefully one day, if we see an uptick, we can sweet talk you into coming back again.
Sounds good.
All right. I'm Laura Lawson. You're listening to The Wine Crush.
Card Crunch. You're not alone. Increasing prices and the costs of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts. American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts in collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-793-2153. 800-793-2153. 800-793-2153.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a million-year-old beach? between drinking clean water or breathing clean air. Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their roiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay-sipping diva, and we're having fun going behind the scenes today. We just spoke with Rob McMillan. He was the founder of the wine division at the Silicon Valley Bank, and he had an interesting perspective when we're looking at it from a winery's point of view. When you look at the wineries in California, let's just round it to 2,800, with only 60% of them, at least in his estimate, making money, that's a huge testament. So think about what you're seeing on your grocery store shelves right now. Think about the price reductions you're starting to see. Remember how I told you to look for the case stacks and the end caps and the inexpensive wine that's there. I think we're going to see wineries having more trouble in the next 24 months than we are right now because they're going to get behind vintage. They're going to get behind on price aggressiveness. And it'll be interesting to watch and see what kind of values we can pick up. But speaking of values, we take our California winery seriously. We definitely want to support our local economies. But this came out. Franzia's $3 Koala, soon to launch stateside. And yes, that is D-O-L-L-A-K-O-A-L-A. As you know, none other than Fred Franzia is launching his own inexpensive Down Under brand by purchasing bulk wine from Australia. It's going to retail here in the United States for about $2.99 a bottle, with the slogan, $3 Koala. Fred is going against the Yellowtail brand, and he states that it's time the American consumer paid the correct price for Australian wine. Now, that leads to a whole bunch of interesting assumptions when we're looking at things. Number one, at $2.99 a bottle, and that's what we're going to pay for it, how can he possibly be making money on the brand? All I know is the amount of money it's going to take to put it in a bottle, to put a label on it, and to get it to the States. My guess is there has to be more than $1.25 in gas in that bottle. So looking at that, it leads you also to the correct assumption, well, if it's going to cost that much to get here, what exactly is in the bottle? Something tells me that the fine people of Australia who have the great Cabernets, who have great Semillons, who have great Sauvignon Blancs from the Barossa, from Eden Valley, from Clare Valley, this is not the kind of impression that you want to be getting for Australian wines. So for those of you who are extraordinarily value conscious, I will even go so far as calling you cheap. There will be a $3 Australian wine out there. For those of you who are just curious, feel free. I'd love to see what your impact and what your idea is of this wine. Call me, 877-4-CRUSH-1, or email me. I have my own personal email now. It's Laura Lawson, LauraLawson, at thewinecrush.com. And for those of you who just like the voyeuristic aspect, please check out our website, winecrush.com, and you can send an email from there. But let us know what you think, about the sympathy for the wineries and what you think about the new $3 koala coming your way. Well, right now, of course, this show is supposed to be about you and the questions you may have regarding your wine consumption. So right now, I think we need to open it up to the wine line. Let's see what we have out there today. I think we have Anne from Virginia. Anne, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Why are there so many different types of Pinot, and what are the differences?
Anne, I'm going to assume that I'm going to take this in a broad spectrum question, that when you go shopping for wine, that you see a wine called Pinot Gris, that you see a wine called Pinot Grigio, that you see a wine called Pinot Blanc, that you see a wine called Pinot Noir. Actually, the list can go on indefinitely. It gets kind of upsetting after a while if you're trying to memorize all of them. Let me start with the basics. Pinot Noir is considered one of the noble grand grapes. And when I say grand grapes, it is quite possible they are doing DNA structuring now that most of the grapes in the planet somehow came from the Pinot Noir vine. The Pinot Noir vine is very finicky. It clones easily. It changes easily. It has a very much schizophrenic personality. And in doing so, it has inspired many different varieties throughout the years. So when you look at Pinot Noir, they are saying that Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio definitely came from Pinot Noir. In fact, in some climates, it can actually take a pink cast to the grape. So in looking at that, just think about them as all as little second and third, fourth and fifth cousins of the Pinot Noir grape. As far as different varieties, Pinot Noir and Pinot Grigio, which for the uneducated and uninformed, Pinot Grigio and Pinot Gris can be defined as the same grape. This is a very popular grape, both the Pinot Grigio and the Pinot Noir. And because it's very popular and found in all the different regions around the world, you're going to find a lot of different types on the shelves. You're going to find different producers making it different styles. And the question is just finding what kind of style that you want to look for and what you want to identify with. Obviously, earlier in the show, I recommended Villa Mountain Pinot Noir from Russian River Valley. That's going to be very cotton candy. It's going to be berry up front. It's going to be berry berries. And so when you also look at Pinot Noir, you could look across to Burgundy. Same grape, just grown differently, has different flavor profiles to it. So ultimately, in your grand search for the Pinots, you have to identify what style you like. I would start with reading the back labels and going from there. Well, Anne, you asked a very short question. I gave you a very long answer. I hope somewhere in there I answered the actual intent and idea of your question. If not, call me back, 877-4-CRUSH-1, and drop that question on the wine line. I am always open for repeat callers. However, right now we have Michael, and Michael is calling us from North Carolina. Michael, welcome to the Wine Crush.
I just want to know which wines have actually the highest caloric amount and which one has the lowest caloric amount.
All right, highest caloric amounts. Now, see, it's questions like this. Let me guess, Michael, you're either looking at a diet or you're looking at trying to base some sugars out there. This is one of the reasons why I am for having label information that the BATF wants us to put on the labels. I would like to see calories. I would like to see sugars. I would like to see carbohydrates, because ultimately it does make it easier when you're having to go through that extended diet period that none of us like. When you're looking for wines with the highest caloric amounts, you have to think about the overall winemaking procedure. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, wine is made by turning sugar into alcohol. So the lower the alcohol content on a bottle of wine, the higher the calories it's going to have in it. It's an inverse proportion. If you have a wine that has a 15% alcohol in it, chances are it has less sugar in it than pretty much a loaf of bread or anything you could pick up on it, because the yeast have gone through, done their job, and changed all the sugar into alcohol. It also means a more entertaining evening, however you want to look at things after the third glass. Suit yourself. When you're looking at wines that have a 9% or an 8% alcohol content, they're going to have a higher level of sugar. So probably what you're looking for. The highest caloric wine out there is going to be port or Sauternes or white Zinfandel. So those three wines that are traditionally sweet, those are ones that those of you on a diet are going to need to stay away from. Speaking of staying away from things, I have overshot my time, so I need to take a small break right now. But when we return, we're going to have another expert come in and let us know what wineries are doing wrong.
Now that we sat nice, broke bread together, shared a glass of wine, I feel I know you a little.
It's dance time in Texas, and we're striking up the band.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro-lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. It works. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
I heard in the news the other day about how one man's $3,000 credit card balance exploded to over $10,000 in no time at all. As good as the plastic in your wallet may be, if you run into any problems with your credit card companies, they'll hit you so hard with late and over-limit fees that your head'll spin, and so will your debt. At that point, you cannot stop your runaway debt problem. Well, yes, you can. If your credit card debt is out of control, you're getting collection calls, you're mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore, call us and one of our partner companies will negotiate on your behalf and show you strategies to help you get out of debt.
If you have $10,000 or more in unsecured debt, call now for a free debt analysis. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro-lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles. Take it from Carroll Shelby.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean it.
Log on to ZMAX.com and find a retail performance partner. ZMAX, performance you can feel.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious.
And so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes.
And soon you'll realize how impactful your kids involvement in the arts can be. They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and today we are turning the tables and looking at behind the scenes when it comes to the wine business. I'm not saying just what it is from a wholesaler or a sales point of view, but rather from a winery's point of view and how they need to be looking at this very intriguing economy we have gotten ourselves into. So to help me along the way, right now we have Dixie Huey. Dixie is with Trellis Wine Consulting, and I'm sure she has some interesting ideas about what some of our wineries are doing right and wrong. Dixie, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
Oh, this is fun. We have had a great time today. It's always nice to get away from the sheer topic of wine for wine's sake and see what goes into it and try and shift your whole thinking pattern. So hopefully we are going to continue on that track with you. Now, I've got to ask you, what is Trellis Wine Consulting? Tell me what you do.
Trellis Wine Consulting is a branding, strategy, and communications firm for small family-owned wine businesses. So basically, I help wineries after the point of production. I'm not a grower. I'm not a winemaker. I help create demand for wines and move them through the marketplace.
You are the ultimate sales guru then.
Let's hope so.
All right. So you are talking to us from the sales and marketing point of view, which is a great counterpoint because we had someone from the banking point of view a little bit earlier. When you're looking at it from a sales and marketing point of view, what's the number one decisive factor that a winery can do to make or break it?
Have a business plan.
You mean actually have a plan, stick to your plan, and honor the plan?
It's as simple and perhaps as boring as that. Plans are dynamic in nature, but they should not be in my head, if you will.
Or jotted down on the back of a cocktail napkin.
Exactly. They can start that way, hopefully over a glass of wine. But having a plan, evaluating your processes and your performance, having a dynamic plan and sticking to it.
I like the way you think. It's something we lecture people on a regular basis. Plan your work, work your plan. But I think a lot of people get away from it. They get so passionate. They get excited. They think, oh, it's a perfect product. It's going to sell itself. And that's just not a very rational way to approach things.
Well, and we're all in the business because we have a passion for wine. It's fun. It's delicious.
We're insane.
Yes, exactly that too. But having a build it and they will come mentality is, it's not only not a differentiating factor for brands, but it's also super risky. And I'm sure that if you had someone on from the banking point of view earlier, that you certainly wouldn't want to bring a bank or a cocktail napkin with some thoughts jotted down.
No, probably not this one especially. What drew me to having you to the show today was you had recently written an article, The 5 Things That Wineries Do Wrong. Can you give us a quick synopsis of what those things are?
Sure. So it's probably not going to be a huge surprise, but mistake number one is not having a business plan.
There we go. We covered that one.
We did. So mistake number two is starting with the label. Often wineries go into the business and they've got a vision for what they want that label to look like. And that's great. Label is the fun part. It's what we see on the shelves. It often attracts people to buy. But it's not where the business should begin.
No, actually, right before in the last segment, I was introducing the fact that Fred Franzi is coming out with a $3 koala. That label definitely came about before the wine. You can count on that. All right, past that, what else are they doing wrong?
Mistake number three would be ignoring the brand identity or simply not having one. So what we're looking for to create demand and to add value to those buying the wine is something that's compelling and consistent. So that could be as simple as having the same messages on the website and the back label, or it could be something more complex that weaves into all of marketing communication.
Looking at that, this is something that you talk to wait staff, you talk to people who've been in the business, and even you talk to people who are just learning about wine. It seems to me that the most deciding factor in people getting behind and enjoying a wine is understanding the winery's story. How much of that do you think factors in?
The story is crucial, and it's, again, it goes back to compelling and consistent. I tell my clients, you know your story. You've got to be prepared to love it because you're going to be telling it until you're blue in the face. And it's got to be a consistent story, but it's, again, got to be compelling. So it's not just about having passion and talking about grapes grown in a vineyard. We assume that as wine lovers. We want to hear something unique, something fun, something that is uniquely your winery.
I mean, I've been in the business for over 20 years, and I'm very fortunate. I have had a lot of contacts and drunk a lot of wine in my lifetime, but the ones that stand out for me are the neat stories. I can tell you 100 stories off the top of my head, even though I probably tasted 20,000 wines. So
yes.
Looking at that, so what's the number 5 thing that they do wrong?
So, excuse me, we have 2 more. We have launching before its time. So going back to that adage, you get one chance to make a first impression.
So premature marketing, premature getting out there.
Exactly. It's very exciting to get out there, but you want to get out there when you have all of your ducks in a row, so to speak. You only have a chance to launch once. And then the mistake number 5 is that build it and they will come. So we love our product. We made it with passion. It's fabulous. people will automatically, therefore, come and buy many cases. Unfortunately, you know, and this wraps back to that having a plan and having meaningful relationships and communication.
I think when I look at the business for as many years as I have, that is probably the biggest falling point of anything I have seen, is people just assuming that it's going to be great because they made it. So I like the way you think, and I definitely think you have hit the nail on the head about the reasons why wineries succeed or why they don't. I'm going to ask you real quick, we've got to close here, do you think today's vintners have an unrealistic expectation?
Tough question on which to end. I'm sure that there are some who do and others who are just doing a tremendous job. It's to me about one wants to have the packaging, the story, the quality, the pricing aligned. And without those aligned, yes, they'd have an unrealistic expectation.
All right. I have definitely encountered some of those in passing. Well, listen, Dixie, I appreciate you being on the show. I would love to have you back at some further adventure so we could get into this a little bit deeper. But right now, I will keep my fingers crossed that our listeners are all listening to the five things they shouldn't do and taking notes and doing it right.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Laura. I look forward to continuing to follow your show.
All right. Well, right now we're going to take a small break, and when we return, you're going to see the creative way where I can wrap all these points up into one. So stay tuned.
Drink, drink, drink.
The Wine Crush.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need health insurance, you need to make this free call and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. They specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it.
Here's the number. Call right now. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Don't take risks with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable family health insurance, call now.
800-799-9991. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Not available in all states. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Not licensed in New York.
Mr. Jackson, we're calling to say you're late on your credit card bill. Can you please call us to schedule a payment and avoid future late fees?
If you're getting collection calls from your credit card companies and you want to put a stop to it, gather your bills now and call the Debt Helpline.
Mr. Jackson, we've been trying to reach you. If we don't hear from you soon, your account will go into collections.
We can help you stop the late and over limit fees on most of your credit cards and reduce your high interest rates, in some cases up to 60%.
Mr. Jackson, this is our last warning call. The next call will be from our legal department.
Get your debt and credit card bills under control. Gather your bills and call today for a free consultation on how we can help you get out of debt. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start shopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood.
Hi-hi!
Concrete.
Hi-yah!
Brick walls.
Hi-yah!
Trees.
Hi-yah!
Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva. And we've had an interesting time today, turning the tables and looking behind the scenes. And what we have done is between a banking expert and a marketing expert, we have looked at things from a winery's point of view, not just about the grape, not just about the glass, but actually about the business part of it. So thank you, Rob McMillan, for coming on. And I like his guesstimate. I like the idea that only 60% of them are making money. I don't like it for their facts. I'm hoping that means the 40% will work harder. As far as Dixie, looking at the different things that wineries do incorrectly, I think the Trellis Wine Consulting Group is right on it when they say that they're not planning it out. They're not looking at things. So I've had the opportunity to sit back, and this weekend I watched the movie Mondavino. For those of you who are out there who have not seen this movie yet, I would recommend going out and watching it because it's a startling contrast on what's happening in the wine business versus the people who are consuming, the people who are making it, and how the dollar is getting in between all that. So when we look at wineries as a whole, particularly those that are coming out in the last 4 years, now before I start this, please understand there are some amazing vintners and some amazing wineries out there that I take my hat off to every day. But ultimately, we have been cultivating the grape in this country for about 240 years. The grape was here long before we are, and chances are it's going to be here long after we are. In that time, as a country, what have we learned? We are following the dollar. And in doing so, our wineries are starting to do the same, and they are starting to take upon themselves the whole image, the whole mystery, and they are creating in their wineries what they think they're supposed to be, what they think the public is looking for. It doesn't matter that the wine's not in the bottle. It doesn't matter that the packaging's not there. It doesn't matter that the story's not there. All that matters is they paid premium money for a great piece of ground, and they can put a certain appellation on that bottle. Ergo, like Trish said, you build it, they will come. But past that, wine should be about love. It should be about passion. It's honor. It's tradition. It's not necessarily anything glorious. It's not necessarily anything that's fabulous and famous. But ultimately, for the ones who are growing the grapes and the ones that are making the wine, it should be fulfilling. And when you have the honor, the tradition, the passion, the great fulfilling nature of these grapes going into a bottle, there is no way it's not going to show. So my hat's off to the vintners who have done it, and my word of warning to the vintners who are trying to masquerade around it. It's not going to fly, not now and not in this economy. So those are my words of wisdom for the day. Definitely had to get off on my soapbox on that one. But as always, that's why you tune into The Wine Crush. Well, I'm Laura Lawson, and I'm reminding you from The Crush that always you need to sip socially. You need to drink responsibly. Drink what you like, not what you're told. And as always, in vino veritas, in wine, we hope at least there's truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.